chart that was just fantastic. I mean, it was really first class. I sat with the guy that I guess won the auction from Savannah, and I was also sitting next to the guy that was taking them to the duck hunt, and so there was some concern about whether they were going to have ducks. But the guy from Savannah, I think his name was Bob, he said, "I don't care. This has made my trip right here."
So just the meal.
Just
yeah.
that experience made the trip.
Yeah.
Now, he was a good shot.
Yeah, he was a great shot. He hunted all over the world. Yeah. He was showing us photos from Argentina and elsewhere. And
I'm sure he was my age or close.
Yeah.
And he just got back from his honeymoon in Tahiti, literally Thursday, and left Friday.
Honey, I'm going to Arkansas to hunt with Hemingway.
To hunt with Hemingway, yeah. And I guess he had his son and brother, and they had their pilot. And,
yeah.
It was just a lot of fun.
Radio Cows is a production of the Central Arkansas Library System and its Arkansas History Department, the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies. For more information, please visit cows.org and butlercenter.org. Our producer is Glenn Whaley, and our production manager is Brett Ratliff. Voices by Jasmine Jobe and John Miller. Engineering and editing by Brett Ratliff, Michael Stotts, and Anna Lancaster. Our executive producers are Leanne Blackwell-Hoskin and David Strickland. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Wednesday at 6 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 Little Rock.
My old friend, State Senator Kevin Smith, former State Senator Kevin Smith from Helena, is this huge Hemingway fan. And somehow he was at an event in Key West, Florida, and found out they did an auction. So he came back and said, let's put one together for the next year. And what he wanted to do is put together a quail hunt in the Pigot area,
right,
in the same area where Ernest Hemingway would hunt quail on his father-in-law's land when he would come back and visit his in-laws, the Pfeiffers, in Clay County, and then go down to the lower White River area for a duck hunt where Hemingway and his famous book editor, Max Perkins, had gone on a hunt in late 1932. And so Kevin somehow put this together. He got a grandson, as we said, of Ernest Hemingway, got a granddaughter of Max Perkins to come along. They put it up the next year in the auction. A gentleman from Savannah, Georgia, purchased it.
Yep.
They tried to do it last year, but the land they were going to duck hunt on, there was actually too much water for them to even get in.
The levees broke up there and flooded.
Black
River flooding.
Yeah, it was flooding. So there was too much water to do a duck hunt. So they put it off for a year, but it came off this year. And we were not part of the duck hunting part of the trip, but we were part of the quail hunting part of the trip.
Yep.
And Clay County, and I thought it went splendidly.
I thought it was fine. The quail were relatively safe, it appeared,
with
our hunting party.
Yes. I wrote a column for the Democrat Gazette about this, and Kevin thanked me, but, our massive contract that we're under with the Butler Center requires us to be honest. So
yes.
Kevin thanked me for not putting in the paper, but I'm going to be honest on the radio. John's not the best shot, is he?
No, he's not. I spent most of my time ducking. Praying for the dogs. It was also his son, so it was Hemingway's great-grandson
also there,
And I would say he was even worse.
Yes, I agree. I'm not sure the grandson had ever held a shotgun, frankly. But it was fun being in their presence.
Yeah.
So we pulled out of Little Rock on a cold, gray,
rainy,
nasty Friday day. And, in fact, of course, Pigot being in the far northeast part of the state, it had actually iced over just to the north of us.
Missouri
was under quite an ice storm.
Yeah. It was foggy and rainy the entire
way. And getting
way.
Close to 32 when
really
we
close.
Got there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But luckily, we didn't fight any ice. It stayed liquid until you got on the Missouri side of the line, and we didn't go on the Missouri side of the line. So we showed up there at the Hemingway Pfeiffer house. And again, for the uninitiated, this house was house in a barn that was built in 1907, and then Pauline Pfeiffer's father, Paul, who was from a very wealthy St. Louis family, came down. He was actually on a train trip through there. And the train, because of flooding, I believe it was, had to spend several days in Piggott and wanted to get out of the rat race of the big city of St. Louis, and found that in that era, land was very cheap in northeast Arkansas. Yep. So he came down and began buying land, eventually owned more than 60,000 acres.
60,000 acres, they said.
You heard me correctly. Yeah, more than 60,000 acres. They moved into that house. He lived there until he died in the 1940s. His widow continued to live there until she died in about 1950. The house passed on was bought by another family who kept a lot of the same furniture.
Furniture.
Just was kept
silverware,
in remarkable
dishes,
shape.
Everything. Yeah.
And then the house was given to Arkansas State University. And Ruth Hawkins, who's done such a great job with what they call their heritage sites, which include the Southern Tenant Farmers Museum at Tyronza, now the Dice Colony exhibits and the Johnny Cash home, and then way down in southeast Arkansas, the Lakeport Plantation. Anyway, they took that on and recreated that house. And I tell people in central Arkansas, I know it's a long drive, and I know it's a three-hour drive. But it is well worth the trip.
Well worth the trip. And the drive is easier now.
If you care about Hemingway at all. I mean, they've even got interpretation in the barn. It's just...
It was his writing studio that the Pfeiffers built for him. The famous... where the famous fire took place that... No telling how many stories we lost in that fire. But, yeah, it's wonderfully produced museum and that remarkable stroke of luck that they... The family that bought the house and the Pfeiffers kept all the furniture, dishes, silver. I think almost everything in it is original. I think the stove was newer, but not that new.
Mm-hmm.
Really makes it for some really interesting interpretation. A lot of these places you'll go to and it's pieces of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But these were actually the Pfeiffers' furniture. One of the most interesting things that they talk about is... He was really sort of a different land. He didn't farm any of the land, as I remember, right?
Right.
Rented it, tenant farmers
and sharecroppers,
And this was during the Depression particularly, and times were hard, and they discovered like 40 coats of paint. Is that what they said, Rex, on the house? And they said what would happen is people would come needing help, and no one could just take money. That was dishonorable.
Uh-huh.
So he'd give them a job to do. It evidently was to paint the house again.
Over and over again. Yeah.
Like 40 or 50 coats of paint on that house.
But the house had been kept in remarkable condition, and then ASU did a good job with it. And as I said, the barn. So you and I had toured it before, but we did again with the group. And then we had a great barbecue dinner that night. And then, and I'll talk a little bit more about this in a minute, but they went down to the old bank building and has now been turned into the inn at Piggott on the square downtown. You and I, however, due to this show, we're such celebrities that we demanded our own place.
We didn't want to be with the commoners and the riffraff.
That's right. So we demanded our own place. So we were put a little house right on the edge of town.
Well, I wouldn't say a little house or a plantation, maybe.
Rosedale. It's got a name. Yeah,
it has a name. Acreage and everything.
Yeah, it was also built in the early 1900s. It's been kept in remarkable shape. It's now a bed and breakfast inn.
It's very nice.
And a lot of Hemingway books in there if you wanted to go up for a weekend. If you're a true Hemingway fan, I can highly recommend it. But it would, again, more than a 100-year-old house. And I thought it was wonderful.
I thought we had a great time. I do remember we were both a little nervous and didn't say anything until finally, I think you said, they just said, we'll have you out at this farmhouse. And I think you said, well, I hope we have separate bedrooms.
Yes. Well, Paul, you're a good guy, but I'm too old to share a bedroom with anybody at night. This is not scout camp.
Not scout camp. But it was wonderful. It was right on the edge of Piggott, and it looked like there was an old orchard and some acreage
out
there.
Out back, yep.
It's a beautiful place, well-appointed and very nice.
Oh, it was. I thought it was great. The story was that Hemingway would hunt in the adjoining fields there, and apparently one of the people that leased land from Mr. Pfeiffer lived in that house and was a farm manager and so forth, and Apparently, Ernest used to like to stop by there for a drink or two before he went back to the Pfeiffer house in town, right?
Well, you know, that night.
Or three, maybe.
Knowing
Ernest Hemingway.
When we were having the barbecue supper, it had been a long day because both parties, the Hemingway party
had flight problems due to the weather.
The boy that actually won the raffle, the auction, they were flying in. So the weather delayed everyone. The plane that the guys from Savannah had to go to Memphis, had to bingo to Memphis. And then, so they were really late. And Hemingway's coming in. You remember the schedule said they land at 1, we'll have cocktails at the Peabody at 2, and should be to Piggott by 3:30. I thought that's not going to happen.
That's right.
So everybody was really late,
even. Yeah.
Really tired. So they did offer. They said, now Paul and Rex are staying out at the farm. And if anyone would like to go out there, because Hemingway stayed there a lot, and the lady of the house was always mad at him because he would put his whiskey glass on the furniture and leave rings. So if anyone would like to come out and see Hemingway's rings, well, thank goodness no one wanted to.
Thank goodness, because we're old men now, and we were ready for bed, actually.
It was 8:30. We had to hit the rack. But they're actually marketing that. You can see Hemingway's rings.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I have to say, we looked. I couldn't find them, but we didn't look very hard.
Well, the host and hostess weren't there. They were out of town that weekend. Yeah. I got a nice email back from one of them when I wrote to thank them for the accommodations. But the inn at Piggott is actually in an old bank building. The bank was built. It went under, actually, during the Great Depression. And then Mr. Pfeiffer himself restarted the Bank of Piggott in, I think, 1930, which is still going.
Still going,
way.
That's right, yeah.
Bank of Piggott, still a strong bank there. But that was the bank building for many years. A couple that are originally from Piggott went to Memphis. I think it's 24 years they lived in Memphis, very well in business, and came back home. They were ready to come back home and bought that building, turned it into a bed and breakfast inn. We went over for breakfast and joined the hunting party for breakfast.
Yeah.
And it great breakfast, and I do want to stay there sometime. It appears to be a beautiful accommodation, and it looks like the Coles have plans, according to him, to do other things around the square.
Yeah, he had a writer's colony there, and really, I think, a real opportunity. The square's still viable. I mean,
it is in Piggott.
Unlike a lot of those towns, there's still commerce there on the square and seems to be doing pretty well. We call him one of our boys, which is our son Josh's friends, college friends, is from Piggott. And he called me that Sunday, Rex, and said, I just got off the phone with my Uncle Joe. Well, it turns out Joe Cole is his uncle. This boy's name is Cole Baldwin. And he said, yeah, I just had a really good visit with some boys from Little Rock. One of them was a guy from Imboden. And so Cole said, I'm listening to Chewing the Fat
Imboden,
on the radio.
Do you happen to be from there?
It's only about 40 miles from Imboden.
We got quite a bit into this segment before that came out, but go ahead.
Yeah. So he said, Uncle Joe has moved back and started telling me he's a lawyer, I think, or was. So I thought, well, what a small world that you would find going to see Ernest Hemingway's grandson, you end up with, you know, people. So thank goodness you couldn't take your concubine on this trip because people would tell on it.
Exactly. But great breakfast. And as we sat there, I mentioned the granddaughter of Max Perkins. And as I just got to talking, we figured out her husband, who had come along, is the longtime State House bureau chief for the Boston Globe, which, of course, is one of the great newspapers in America. And me being an old newspaper man, I just love that.
Yeah, we had a great conversation. Yeah.
So a lot of newspaper talk during breakfast.
He was such good friends with Paul Tsongas. He was Paul Bear at his funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And, really interesting. Still there. Still.
Oh yeah.
Still on the job.
Yeah, has covered Massachusetts politics for many, many years, and it was just really fascinating to speak to both he and his wife.
Jenny. Her name is Jenny.
Jenny.
And I asked her.
She is a psychiatric nurse, but she's also a documentary producer. She did a documentary that won a number of awards on prisoners in an Alabama prison who converted to Buddhism.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So interesting couple to visit with.
Well, I asked her the next morning while we were having my usual 9 o'clock rum. Lord. Anyway, what she thought about Scott Berg's biography of her, grandfather, Max Perkins, and they made the movie Genius based on that. And she said, we loved the book. Thought it really captured Grandpa and
they did
really liked it. Wasn't as crazy about the movie. That was a little more focused on F. Scott Fitzgerald. But they said, yeah, we really thought the book was great. She said she had no memory of Max Perkins. But the family really, really felt good about it. It's a great biography.
Oh, absolutely.
And the movie Genius is really Jude Law, I think, plays Thomas Wolfe.
Well I was going to say Perkins, not only Hemingway, but F. Scott Fitzgerald, Thomas Wolfe, all of whom he kind of nurtured through the years.
Yes. Maybe the most famous editor
and
of all time.
I would think all three of them, from what I've read, would have taken a lot of nurturing from their editor, don't you think?
That's exactly right. Yeah, I think that's right. Hemingway and Fitzgerald particularly. Well, Thomas Wolfe, too.
Well, Thomas Wolfe also. Absolutely. You know, we mentioned hunting with John, the grandson. He wrote a book about his family, and the name of the book is Strange Tribe, which is probably aptly named.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah. Well, I think Wolf's first book, when he brought it, the manuscript, when he brought it to Perkins, was like 3,000 pages.
Oh, my goodness.
Just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And they got it down to a more manageable number. But maybe the most famous fiction editor, certainly, of all time, Max Perkins.
Well, I really enjoyed visiting with them. And then when we were sitting there, Paul, because we're both old Arkansas guys, and we both enjoyed this, there was another gentleman who came in who was not
part of the hunting party. Yeah.
Was not part of the hunting party, but he obviously knew the owners well, came in and sat down, and my first thought was, he looks like an old football coach. Well, I'll be dadgum. Link Fuller, who had been an old star for the Piggott Mohawks, was
All-American.
Was back in Link Fuller. I mean, that's like out of a movie, right? That name? Link Fuller?
And he looked like Link Fuller.
And he looked like Link Fuller should look.
Yeah.
But he had been a star for the Piggott Mohawks. He was speaking that night at the Piggott Mohawk football banquet, which we wanted to stay for, but I had to meet some friends back at the ASU.
Graduated in 1969.
Yeah. Went and became a very well-known football coach in Texas, and then became a scout for the Dallas Cowboys. And we got to visit with Link Fuller, obviously a local hero.
Local hero, absolutely. I told Cole when he called me, he said, "You met Link Fuller?" Sure it is.
So he knew the name automatically.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Hero. Their last Piggott, All-American, I think, from Piggott.
Yeah.
But Corey, what was funny is that so everybody there, including Hemingway's grandson and great-grandson, were there for about Hemingway, and Fuller starts saying, you know, Ernest Hemingway wrote A Farewell to Arms here in Piggott, got a house right
on there. Did
y'all know that? Y'all know that?
I don't think he knew who all was in the hunting party.
Know. Probably didn't care.
No, probably
not. But it turns
not.
Out Uncle Joe, who owned the place, they played football together.
Mm-hmm.
And so as soon as he identified himself, and he said, yeah, I graduated in 69. And Joe said, yep, we lost our last game to Corning.
Corning, yeah, the hated rivals from down the road.
And Link
there
said,
in
you
County.
Would bring that up.
And they played on Thanksgiving
years.
Day in those
Thanksgiving
days.
Thanksgiving Day, And I think they were undefeated and lost their last game to Corning, which is just the worst that could possibly happen.
Yeah, how can you lose to Corning when you're a Piggott Mohawk, right?
Link Fuller.
Link was serious about it because he excused himself from the table and said, I've got to go work on my talk,
Had to go study. He said, I've got to go study.
So Link was going to put it on those boys
night. I bet he did. They'll be fired up. I don't know what kind of record they had, but I don't remember reading about them in the paper this year.
Yeah. So anyway, where we were hunting was a place called Liberty Hill Outfitters.
Turns out not easy to find Liberty Hill
Outfitters. Well, I was just about to say, it's a beautiful place. And for the uninitiated, unfortunately, and I could go on and on about this, but wild quail are almost a thing of the past in Arkansas.
Right.
Our Game and Fish Commission is making efforts to restore them. But these are pen-raised birds they put out. They do the same with pheasant. Again, pen-raised, but beautiful piece of property right on Crowley's Ridge. But basically, you take a due south down the ridge.
Right.
Now, probably as it turned out, the fast way would have been to just get on the highway the ridge where you're looking at the ridge over to your right and go south to
Rector
and then get back in. Well, we're told we're going to take the back way and stay on the ridge the whole way.
And this was Adam who lived there.
Pouring rain, muddy roads. And Paul, now, it wasn't our fault. We were following a guide, but we did get lost a few times.
Well, I think you said pretty early, you said, Adam is not making confident turns.
No, he didn't act confident,
our leader. A lot of braking before, stopping and looking, and it's not going well. I don't know, 30 minutes later, he pulls into a driveway. We thought, this must be it. Nope, he backs out. And he said, well, I think I missed the turn. So we all had to turn around and go back. Then he stopped like a mile down the road and said, no, it is back the other way. I think he was using GPS, unfortunately, rather than but he lives there.
Absolutely, he had no
completely
excuse.
Lost, but everyone was lost. We were actually the first ones to get there.
We were, and I love Crowley's Ridge because it's so unusual.
Just
I mean,
beautiful.
You've got this flat land, and all of a sudden, this thing pops up out of the delta on either side. Of course, it runs from southeast Missouri all the way down to Helena, where it empties into the river, basically, it ends. But a great part of what makes up Arkansas. I mean, just as much a part of Arkansas as the Washita Mountains or the Ozark Mountains or the Gulf Coastal Plain. And we weren't really in a hurry, so it really wasn't bad because it really was a beautiful view of the ridge.
Beautiful drive, just a gorgeous drive, beautiful farms. And now, we had paved maybe a mile of paved road, then we were gravel.
Then we hit the gravel.
Yeah. Now, we were in the truck, the truck that I used for my farming wrecks that I
had. When you go back to the plantation at Embo.
The plantation and check on the crops. But that's like three times it's been usable in my life. The rest of the time,
put in four-wheel drive.
I'm in West Little Rock in it. But anyway, it was good to have it. But a beautiful drive. And you could see there were some really nice places out there. Now, there were some typical Crowley's Ridge, Arkansas places, but you could see this is an attractive place for people to live, and now, I suspect land is affordable.
Yeah, now, of course, on either side, you've got the delta, as I said, so you've got row crops. You've got soybeans, you've got cotton, you've got wheat, milo, rice, but up on the ridge, it is so different than the rest. Those are mainly cattle farms and some orchards,
and some
peach
orchards. Yeah, used to
always
be a lot of peaches.
Crowley's Ridge peaches.
But mostly cattle and maybe some
a lot of chicken houses.
A lot of chicken houses, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. Do you know, Rex, you and I both commented on the drive. We went up going there through Jonesboro.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get out of Paragould, actually heading to Piggott, how huge those fields were.
Mm.
Still a lot of cotton growing up there.
And I was going to say, while cotton has fallen off most of Arkansas, you get up into that corner and cotton's still big.
You can
see where they had cotton in the fields.
And it was so foggy and rainy that while we were paralleling the ridge, you couldn't see that far. Couldn't see the end of the field.
Mm-mm.
It was really eerie. And I think John Hemingway made the comment on his way up, said, where the hell are we?
I think that was his exact words. They said, where are you taking
me?
He lives in Montreal, by the way.
He lives in Montreal.
In Canada. Yeah.
And he had his lovely
Russian-born wife.
Uh-huh. Very nice. But, yeah, that's a beautiful stretch of the country. And, the ridge varies in heights all the way down. But that's got to be one of the highest parts of the ridge there.
Oh, I would think so. I would think so.
And it's a wide part, too, because this entire...
That's the northern part of the ridge near the Missouri border.
Right.
With your wife being from Helena, you're probably more familiar with the southern part of the ridge.
Yeah, it's big down in Helena. But Jonesboro, too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always amazed at Crowley's Ridge. And it's the climate is a little different. Certainly the soil is different. The flora and fauna are all unique to the ridge. And it's a really interesting part of Arkansas.
So Stephen Crancer is the name of the guy, businessman there and rector, who took his old family farm up on the ridge and turned it into a game farm. And we actually walked from where we were going to have lunch there. You didn't even have to drive. They had the birds put out fairly closely. But beautiful part of the ridge.
Beautiful
had the hay
the
bales out there
and they
still.
Had, they had guns. Those that didn't bring the guns, they had plenty of guns for people. And we did have, thank goodness, a fluorescent vest on.
So we wouldn't get shot by the guest of honor.
But, they were really trying to help John. It was John Hemingway. So they wanted to shoot some to practice, the shooting. What am I trying to say, Rex?
Clay pigeons.
Clay pigeons.
Yeah.
And so they would sling them out over the pond. And I don't know, he shot 15 or 20 times, never hit a thing.
No.
And at one point, someone was kind of teasing him, and I heard the wife say, Be careful with that. He's very sensitive.
I wasn't saying a word, were you?
I did say once we got out of the field, I said, John, I believe your barrels are crooked. He said, yeah, that was the problem, crooked barrel.
And I was not going to shoot at a clay pigeon with that many people watching myself.
No, I wouldn't either. No.
Were you? I chickened out, I'll admit it.
No.
I didn't want to miss in front of that big an audience.
I was standing next to, what was the reporter? His name Frank?
Frank Phillips.
Frank. Mm-hmm. I was standing next to him. He said, well, son, are you going to shoot? I said, Lord, no, I'm the worst shot in the world. Well, it turns out, no, I'm not.
No, we're not. Made us look good.
Made us look good. But they had wonderful working dogs.
Yeah.
And we headed out and walked, I don't know, a quarter of a mile up into the hills.
Yeah.
And
maybe a half
the head
mile.
Quail.
It was a nice little, they had put the birds out. He had two bird dogs. And as I told you, I grew up bird hunting because my dad was a huge quail hunter. And we always had at least two, often three bird dogs at our house. And it just brought back, even though these were pen-raised birds, and they're not quite the same, but it brought back a lot of good memories for me.
Yeah.
And it had been a long time. Most people who hunt birds in Arkansas now go to western Oklahoma or western Texas,
right,
or far south Texas.
Yeah.
And it had been a long time since I had been behind a bird dog pointing a quail in Arkansas.
Well,
on Arkansas soil. That was nice.
I was very aware as soon as we decided to go to this. I didn't want to have a Dick Cheney moment out there. I didn't want to see Humanities Council director kills Hemingway's grandson.
That would have made the paper, probably.
And the Jonesboro Sun probably would have.
Yeah. I would have called it into AP and got a stringer's fee, Paul.
Well, but it was kind of a big deal because we had eminent writers like you covering it. And who is our friend from Rector that has the
– Ron Kemp,
who has
the papers up in that area. They do the Delta Crossroads magazine,
yeah,
which is a great magazine if you're in northeast Arkansas.
And they're
doing a big spread.
Big
Ron
spread
took all the photos, and I wrote the story, which I've already turned in, by the way.
But you know, it was so wet that the quails wouldn't flush hardly at all.
No,
they wouldn't fly.
No, pin raised. The dogs got a few of them, unfortunately.
I sure did. Not a good sign. One of them, I thought the dog was about to get shot. It was a miracle he didn't.
Yeah.
Thank God he was a bad shot. But
had
an old dog that knew what she was doing and then a pup that didn't. But it was a lot of fun watching them work. We were out there an hour and a half maybe or something.
Maybe
like
a couple hours.
Might have been.
But it was a great walk on a cold morning. We were properly dressed though. So it was comfortable. It had rained as we drove out, but the rain stopped. It was still misty and in the 30s, I guess, mid-30s. But you know, when you're walking, that's fine. And then we came back, and I guess like any true Hemingway event should be, rum and cigars were served at that point.
And the rum was one that the family is sponsoring or has added their name to.
Yeah, somehow involved.
It was called Papa's Pilar.
Pilar, named after his boat,
his
right?
Boat,
the Pilar.
Dark rum. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a sweet rum. Well, it wasn't kind, it was sweet. And it was one of these things, here, you better have some rum. Oh, well, you know, I want to be polite. Well, it was actually quite tasty. So, you know, but it was actually, I think, Rex, we had some before we actually went out to the hunt. So I think we had
to do that. Surely not.
We had
before you have a gun.
Well, that's true. Maybe I'm probably not remembering that correctly. I know there was the bottles were all empty.
Yes,
probably
by
six
the,
of them.
By
there were a lot of people there, but cigars and then the I guess it was the Friends Group or the Advisory Council.
The Advisory
of the
Board
Pfeiffer.
For the Hemingway Pfeiffer Museum joined us, and we had a grilled quail luncheon. And I've got to get to this restaurant now. It's a place that is in downtown Paragould, and it's called Chow. Now, unlike Chow and Chow Bocce in Little Rock, which are C-I-A-O, we're talking northeast Arkansas,
Chow.
So it's C-H-O-W.
Right.
It's not the Italian Chow.
Yeah.
It's Southern Chow. But it's a fine dining establishment.
This was first class.
It's Chow at 118 in downtown Paragould, and they were out there, and they catered it, and it was outstanding.
Grilled a quail and risotto and some kind of a sweet potato thing and a cherry tart that was just fantastic. I mean, it was really first class. I sat with the guy that I guess won the auction from Savannah, and I was also sitting next to the guy that was taking them to the duck hunt, and so there was some concern about whether they were going to have ducks. But the guy from Savannah, I think his name was Bob, he said, I don't care. This has made my trip right here. So
just the meal?
Just that experience made the trip.
Yeah.
Now, he was a good shot, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a great shot. He hunted all over the world. Yeah. He was showing us photos from Argentina and elsewhere. And
I'm sure he was my age or close.
Yeah.
And he just got back from his honeymoon in Tahiti, literally Thursday, and left Friday.
Honey, I'm going to Arkansas to hunt with Hemingway.
To hunt with Hemingway, yeah. And I guess he had his son and brother, and they had their pilot. And,
yeah.
It was just a lot of fun.
Radio Cals is a production of the Central Arkansas Library System and its Arkansas History Department, the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies. For more information, please visit cals.org and butlercenter.org. Our producer is Glenn Whaley, and our production manager is Brett Ratliff. Voices by Jasmine Jobe and John Miller. Engineering and editing by Brett Ratliff, Michael Stotts, and Anna Lancaster. Our executive producers are Leanne Blackwell-Hoskin and David Strickland. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Wednesday at 6 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 Little Rock.